The Honorable Choice. Pairing. Dean Winchester Times OFC. Summary. June 1872. Captain Dean Winchester of the U.S. Cavalry is tasked with one job. Break a wild Mustang. He just didn't expect the woman who infiltrates his camp, intent on freeing her tribe's horse. Author's note. I got inspired after a recent rewatch of Spirit, The Stallion of the Cimarron. Literally a perfect movie, as well as having Yellowstone in the back of my brain. I thought this idea might be a good fit for this Jackals vs. Bingo prompt. Disclaimer. I've done extensive research for this one, both on the American Indian Lakota tribe and on American history during this time in the late 1800s, also known as the Old West, during the American Indian Wars and the Sioux Wars. Of course, one of my main goals is to avoid inaccuracies, both historical and cultural. Jackals vs. Bingo 24 prompt. Western AU. Song inspo. The Spirit soundtrack. Word count. 4.6K. Tags. Warnings. 18 plus only to be safe. Racism / racial slurs. Attempted sexual assault. Not successful. Protective Dean. Angst, some violence, and some action. Part 1. Pride and Prejudice. June, 1872. Dean hears some of his men shouting, along with the telltale cracking of bone that would make a less seasoned soldier wince. He spares a look to Benny, his lieutenant, and sets down his glass of whiskey. Dean's path takes him brusquely out of his office and toward the stables. He grabs his gun and his hat on the way there, setting the latter on his head. Is it too much to ask for one night where he can drink in peace? Dean comes to find a young woman being detained by two of his men, Klein and Novak. Roman sports a bloody nose and his eye is already beginning to swell. The woman fights against their hold. Even under the pale moonlight, Dean notes the way she's dressed. A deerskin dress cinched at the waist, over thin pants and shoes. He surveys her tan skin, her black hair that blends into the night, twisted into a long braid, and the anger in her dark eyes. What do we got here? Dean says. He stows his gun in its holster as he approaches her, resting his hand at his belt. I caught her breaking into the stables, Captain, Roman says. He prods with a hiss at his busted nose while trying to stem the bleeding. That's going to be a bad break. She remains tight-lipped, stubborn. Probably doesn't even understand English. Savage bitch, he says. Dean shoots him an impassive look to cover up his annoyance. Put a cork in it, Roman. He orders. Then, he focuses back on her. You're a Lakota, aren't you? Aside from their main mission here in the Dakota Territory, the colonel has been fixed on fighting back against the Lakota Indians, especially after they sabotaged the supply line last month. The proud tilt of the woman's chin is her only answer to Dean's question. Her gaze drags down his form with disdain, like he's the savage. His mouth twitches mirthlessly. The Lakota rear up their own horses pretty damn well. Why would you want to steal one of ours? He asks. She glances away from him, first at her feet, then over at the camp's latest guest. Dean, Benny, and a few of his men wrangled up a horse a few days ago. He's a beautiful Kyger Mustang with a nasty mean streak. He barely got through a trim this afternoon and almost took a chunk out of Rufus when he tried to brand the horse. The colonel ordered them to tie the horse up to a post just outside the corral. No food or water for 3 days. He turned to Dean with a firm set to his face and issued a single order. Break him. Now, Dean catches the furtive look the Lakota woman gives the horse, who flicks his tail. The animal stares right at her, as if into her eyes. Oh, don't tell me, you here for him? Dean says with a chuckle. That thing's a little too much for you, sweetheart. That earns her attention, steely and unimpressed. He is too much for you, she says. Her voice is smooth and would even be pleasant if not for the circumstances. He is one of ours. You will never break him. Dean's eyes widen a fraction. He glances back at the Mustang.
So that's why she's here,
he thinks. She's trying to mount a rescue. Dean feels a twinge deep inside, but he can't allow himself to care about that. They've collected a strong horse that will be a good support for their objectives here, once he's broken.
Well, see.
Dean says, tipping his Stetson up to meet her gaze.
That's kind of our specialty. Sir, should we take her to the stockade?
Novak asks. He seems reluctant to do so to a woman, even an Indian, but he's always been good at following orders. Dean opens his mouth to reply, but another voice cuts him off. Colonel Asmodeus Sanderson steps out and takes a look at their captive.
Not the stockade,
he says, with that southern drawl that betrays his Kentucky roots.
Not yet.
He approaches her with a slow, calculated gait. His hands gather behind his back. Dean gives her credit for looking Sanderson in the eye. She seems rightly wary, but not afraid.
We won't hurt you. I give you my word.
The colonel says,
if you'll lead us to your people's camp.
He takes a hold of her chin, turning her face this way and that, like he's examining a dirty animal, and all that he'll have to do to make it clean. She spits in his face. Dean bites the inside of his lip against a smile. She's got as much fight in her as the Mustang. However, he has to school his face back into stoicism when Sanderson rears back in anger. The harsh smack rings out in the clearing, along with the woman's cry. Dean doesn't allow himself to outwardly react, but inside, his spine tightens as he fights his instincts. Only Klein and Novak's hold on her arms keeps her upright. She pants for breath, but again, she meets the colonel with a face that doesn't give away anything, despite the reddening mark on her cheek.
The post, he barks. 3 days. No food or water.
Dean is kept busy by his duties. He makes sure the camp is running in order, accepting shipments of supplies and ammunition, among other things. Cass Novak is in charge of the stables, caring for the horses and putting them through their training. Jack Klein is young and strong and a good assistant, along with others in his unit. Right now, Dean and Benny are going over the plans with Colonel Sanderson for continuing construction on the railroad from here to the Black Hills. It's a path that cuts straight through Sioux territory, the bands of Dakota and Lakota Indians that occupy the land.
The natives are fighting us tooth and nail,
Sanderson says.
But maybe our guest will be able to help us negotiate.
Dean remains quiet, ignoring yet another uneasy twinge in his gut. He didn't join the army to fight the Indians. He doesn't always understand their way of doing things, but he understands why they fight. To protect their land and to protect their own. It's the same reason Dean fights when he has to. He joined the army because, well, it felt like the right thing to do at the time. His father had been a cavalry major and he'd died an honorable death, now about a decade past.
Has it really been 10 years? Christ.
Dean wipes his brow. Even with the windows open, the office is humid and smells like ass. He glances outside where both the Mustang and the woman are tied to their posts under a sweltering sun at high noon. Not for the first time, Dean wonders what his dad would think of him now. After the meeting, Dean and Benny fall into step together to inspect the camp. The summer sun shines hot on their blue uniforms, and occasionally they raise their hats to mop the sweat from their brows. Things are running as usual, but many of the men's eyes occasionally turn to the posts. Dean's attention wanders there too without him realizing, catching on the woman's dark hair. It shines even blacker in the sunlight, like a raven's wing. He knows the shade because his dad used to have a feather kept in his journal, like a bookmark.
You okay, brother?
Benny asks. Dean realizes what he's doing, and his attention returns to the task at hand.
Get it together, always forward, never backward. Just fine. Dean replies. Benny gives him a knowing look.
Bit unsavory, ain't it?
He says.
Keeping her chained up without even a lick of water.
The Indians are getting smarter, bolder. They're ambushing our men, going after our supply lines, and now, stealing our horses. Dean says.
This is strategy.
Benny shrugs slightly, making a sound of agreement. Dean hesitates, his gloved fingers flexing against his sides.
If she was a man, you guys wouldn't give a shit about putting a bullet through her head,
Dean says. Benny's gaze shifts downward. He doesn't reply, but he concedes the point all the same. They continue their route, and Dean keeps the rest of the conversation on the work at hand. Mila has gone far longer without drink, but the sun is particularly unforgiving today. She's prayed and prayed for even one cloud to glide overhead and shield her for a while. It's not much better for her companion. He paces in place, occasionally tugging his head against the rope that binds him to his post. She makes a clicking sound at the horse, getting his attention. She calls him by his name, and his ears flicker in her direction. He offers her a short whinny in response.
I see you, Mato. I am with you,
she says in her native tongue. She hopes the sound of her voice will soothe him. He looks tired and hungry, but his eyes flick hard and untrusting on any man who comes near him. His spirit isn't broken.
Hey, shut the hell up over there.
Roman shouts at her from where he and Cass are taking a short lunch break. Cass gives him a certain look, crossed mostly with annoyance. Mila resists the urge to roll her eyes. Instead, she closes them and tilts her face back to the sun. In a way, it feels cleansing. Maybe it can wash away the stench of the white man's hands on her body, manhandling her, checking her for weapons. She spends the rest of the day watching the camp. One of their leaders, the green-eyed one, calls this a fort. It does look fortified, with tall walls made of thick wood constructed to form a cage, whether to keep others out or to keep the men and horses in. She identifies the colonel as their chief of a kind. Green Eyes is second in command, followed by the bearded one with a strange voice. Even the scruffy blue-eyed one has some authority, mostly over the child-faced one. There are too many others to rank them all, but she knows the loud-mouthed one is arrogant, even after she broke his nose. The way he carries himself, he clearly thinks he has more power than he actually has. In her mind, Mila conjures up different plans of escape. All of them fall short in some way. The men didn't find all of her weapons. A small knife is hidden deep in her boot. She could saw at her binds within an hour, but even with Mato to carry her out and away, the problem is escaping this camp without alerting the men, without getting shot. She has 3 days to think. That night, the moon refuses to give her clarity. Her stomach is too empty, her throat too dry, her tongue thick in her mouth. Her attention shifts in and out of consciousness until the sound of boots crunching in the dirt trills unease down her spine. More alert, she sits up straighter. The loudmouthed one, the one they call Roman, comes to taunt her, offering her water, then drinking for himself instead. He comes closer to examine her. He has a small bind over his broken nose.
You know, you're a pretty one,
he says, taking another cold sip as his gaze drags over her form.
For a wild thing.
His face nears hers, clean-shaven, though his thin smile reminds her of a rattlesnake. Dread and repulsion churn at odds in her stomach as she realizes what he's really here for. It doesn't matter if he truly wants her or just wants to pay her back for his face. Either way, he means to take her here in the dirt. She looks away, not wanting to let him see her fear
or the dread tightening her stomach, rising into her throat. He winds long fingers into her hair. At first, the hold is gentle, deceptive. Then it's tight against her scalp. She hisses in pain when he tugs her head back and forces her to look at him. Her breathing quickens as she tries to pull away. He draws in close to try and claim her in a kiss, but she headbutts him, hard. He cries out and stumbles back, his flask falling to the ground. He angrily grabs her and hauls her up to her feet. He pushes her hard against the post and unbuckles his belt just to stuff it in her mouth. With his free hand, he begins to undo his pants. She refuses to cry out, even though she spits out his belt and fights him, trying to kick out his knees. Suddenly, the man's body is ripped away from her. Mila loses her footing and falls to the dusty ground, sliding against the wooden beam she's tied to. The wind is knocked out of her, but when she raises her head, she watches with wide eyes as the green-eyed one beats the other man into the dirt. It doesn't take much, just a few well-placed fists. Roman lies there catching his breath, and he spits a wad of phlegm and blood. His left eye will match his nose, that's for sure. Green Eyes looks angry and disgusted. He huffs and puffs while staring down at his subordinate. He pushes back his short brown hair and points an ungloved hand at Roman. Get back to the goddamn barracks. You're going to be mucking out stalls until shit's coming out of your ears. He growls. Roman doesn't argue, though it's obvious that he wants to. He just picks himself up, makes a show of straightening up his open uniform jacket while catching his breath. He walks past Green Eyes with a resentful, angry look. Green Eyes watches him until he disappears inside. Then, he turns to her. His gaze softens somewhat, but it's still unreadable. He crouches down in front of her, resting his arms on his thighs. Mila's gaze briefly falls to his hands. They're calloused, the hands of a laboring man. He carries himself like a warrior. Sorry about that, he says. It's not what she expected. Mila eyes him warily when he moves closer. She presses her back against the post until it hurts her spine. He raises up his hands placatingly.
I'm not going to hurt you,
he says. That is what your colonel said, she says. Her voice cracks with dryness. I didn't believe him either. His lips flicker at a rueful smile. It wrinkles crow's feet around his eyes, breaking his stony face.
Fair enough.
He reaches for his belt and retrieves a flask, similar to the one his subordinate carried. He extends it out to her.
It's water, unless you prefer whiskey. I know I do,
he says. She raises a brow at him. But hearing the sloshing inside the flask, her thirst takes over her wariness, and even her pride. She tentatively leans forward. He brings it closer so she can press her lips to the opening. Despite his colonel's orders, he lets her drink as much water as she's able. When she's done, he pockets the flask and sighs, running a hand through his hair.
What's your name?
He asks. That she will not give him. Names are sacred to her people, and this man, while seeming to have a shred of honor, isn't worthy.
Don't want to even tell me your name?
He says. He nods slightly.
Okay, well, I'm Dean, Captain Winchester to this band of delinquents.
He gestures around the camp with a dismissive hand. Mila only watches him. She's never seen a white act like this, breaking his leader's rules, being kind. What a strange man. But if he had any real convictions, he would untie her and let her go, along with Mato. She won't hold her breath. Dean's brows raise up toward his hairline and his full lips form a pout. Realizing he's not going to get anything more from her, he lets out a tired huff and straightens up.
Well, good night,
he says. He finally leaves her alone, but she can't help but follow the swaggering path of his bowed legs and heavy boots. They carry him away and back indoors. A strange man. By the morning of the third day, Dean is ready to do what he does best, or at least one thing he does best. He's no stranger to horses. He grew up on a farm in Lawrence, Kansas, where he and his brother would help take care of the animals. Dean was older, so he helped his father till the land and train the horses. Sometimes he and Sam would sneak off and race their favorite ones until their mom called them back for dinner. In fact, part of what earned Dean his rank in the U.S. Cavalry was how well he could command a horse. His own is resting in the stables. Today, he's getting in the ring with the Mustang. Well, not right away. He lets a few of his guys go first to tire him out. Even after 3 days of no food or water, the horse is living up to his bad attitude. He bucks each of them off after just a few seconds in the corral. Dean can tell it's becoming a kind of game for the horse. His dun-colored coat shines in the sun, his brown-socked legs kicking up dust and manure as he brays angrily at whoever tries to mount him. Dean notices the Lakota woman watching with an amused smile on her face while she sits with her hands tied to her post. She's enjoying the show, like she knew this would happen. It seems to give her energy every time another man is thrown off the horse and limps out of the ring. Dean shakes his head. Pitiful. He puts two gloved fingers to his mouth and whistles the entire clearing to attention. He saves Klein the chance to bruise his spine and pats him on the shoulder. Dean steps into the corral and positions himself into the stirrups, wrapping the reins around his hands. The horse is breathing hard, but he's not done. He's still got fight in him. Dean sees it in his brown eyes. All right, Mustang. You're big and bad. I get it. Dean says lowly. But I don't scare easy. Give me your best damn shot. Cass and Benny give him wary looks from where they stand outside the gate. Hold on to your hat, Cap, Benny mutters. Dean adjusts his hat and rests his gun on the post for safekeeping. He wants to feel as natural as possible, like it's just him and this horse out back in his family farm. He holds on tight to the reins. He's fully prepared for how the Mustang takes off at a galloping clip around the ring. He twists and bucks, but Dean claps his thighs tight and holds on for the ride. The horse gets smarter. He runs for the water trough just outside the ring. He slams Dean against the side of it once, twice, and manages to throw him off, with Dean landing right in the water trough. He bursts out from the dirty water, sopping wet and spluttering in anger. He looks over at the horse trotting around, whinnying and tossing his head like he's laughing. Dean can't help it. His anger fades, and he smiles. This guy's got some brass balls. I'll give him that. The Lakota woman laughs. Dean hears it, and his head swivels toward her. She bites her lip, but she knows she's been caught. Despite his injured pride, Dean's lips curve with a smirk. Just gonna laugh at me, huh? I see things are going well. Comes a familiar drawl. Dean's face falls as he looks up and finds Colonel Sanderson. Dean pulls himself out of the trough and tries to squeeze some water out of his uniform. He clears his throat.
Well, it's going, sir. Just gonna take a little more time than I thought.
Dean says. He quickly reclaims his hat from the ring, giving the Mustang a smart berth. After he climbs back out, he goes over to the post where he left his pistol.
Hold steady.
Sanderson barks at the order, but not at Dean. The other men wrangle the horse back into the pen, where Sanderson climbs up and mounts the horse himself. To his credit, he stays on longer than even Dean thought he would. The Mustang gallops and circles. He tries slamming Sanderson on the sides of the corral, tries bucking him and bucking him, but the man clings on, even when his hat falls into the dirt. The horse is exhausted.
He eventually stops in the middle of the ring, panting for breath, his legs shaking slightly. Dean straightens at attention.
So does the Lakota woman, he notices. She looks worried, her brows furrowing.
Sanderson swipes a hand over his graying hair and mustache to collect himself. He raises his head with an arrogant smile.
You see, gentlemen, any horse can be broken,
he says. He kicks the horse with his spur.
Move along, Mustang.
To everyone's amazement, the horse obeys him. He moves forward at a slow clip. All the men applaud, even Dean, belatedly.
There are those in Washington who believe the West will never be settled.
Sanderson continues.
The Northern Pacific Railroad will never breach Nebraska.
His gaze draws over to the woman. Her eyes are filled with tears as she watches the colonel make his rounds.
A hostile Lakota,
he says in derision,
will never submit to Providence.
She stares back at him with steel in her watery eyes. Dean doesn't realize his jaw is clenched tight until he feels the strain in his jaw. He forces himself to relax, with his hand on his dampened belt.
And it's that kind of small thinking that would say this horse would never be broken,
Sanderson says.
Discipline, time, and patience. That's all you need to level a wild thing.
Just then, the horse stops abruptly.
Mustang?
Sanderson asks in warning. Dean tenses. He knows what's about to happen.
Sir,
he calls out. But it's too late. The stallion revs and charges, bucking even wilder than before. He swings his head and rears back high on his hind legs with a powerful bray. Sanderson yells in fear and strain, but he stays on the creature's back. The horse's angry eyes take on a darker shade of conviction. When all four of his hooves hit the ground, he finally bucks hard enough to get the colonel off his back, though he still clings to the reins near the animal's head. He comes face to face with the horse's crazed eyes. His own are wide and full of terror. Hot breath heats Sanderson's face. Then the horse swings his head and tosses the man out of the ring. In the process, the horse falls on his side and shatters a section of the wooden beams that's fenced him in. While he shakes his head and gets his hooves under him, Dean and Benny help the colonel up to his feet. His uniform is a wreck, and now, with a bruised body and likely a couple of broken ribs, the man is fuming. Klein and Roman wrangle the horse's reins and keep him more or less in place. The colonel shoves Dean and Benny off of him. He reaches for his gun in his belt and aims it at the Mustang. Dean goes rigid in shock, but he knows he can't interfere. If he does, it could warrant some major discipline. The colonel pulls the hammer back on the revolver, but before he can pull the trigger, the sound of cutting rope and a feminine yell breaks the silence in the clearing. The Lakota woman pulls the colonel's arms down, and the gun goes off into the ground. Her elbow comes up quick to strike the man between the eyes. He careens back into Benny, who catches him. Meanwhile, the woman swings up onto the Mustang. She grabs a strong hold by the neck and barks something in her native language. It spurs the horse onward, and he breaks through the crowd of men at a gallop. Dean watches with widening eyes and furrowing brows.
Shit.
He runs to the stables where he finds Baby waiting for him. Her black coat ripples as she stamps impatiently.
Come on, sweetheart.
He beckons. He leads the mare out of the stable, and after grabbing a coil of rope from the supply bench, he mounts her smoothly. With a subtle kick of his heel, she picks up speed to follow the Mustang and his rider. They're already approaching the gate where the men are quickly trying to close it. There's still a window of opportunity for escape, but not only is Dean on their heels, Roman also stands on a pile of crates filled with iron parts that are due to be shipped out in the morning for continued construction on the railroad. Roman holds a rifle. He trains his weapon on the woman, taking deadly aim. Dean's jaw clenches and his brows furrow. He knows then, in the breath of a few seconds, that he has to make a choice.
If he does nothing, both she and the horse are as good as dead. Sam used to call him reckless, stubborn as the horses he spent long hours taming. Right about now, his brother is probably right. Dean reaches for his gun, aims, and shoots within the span of those seconds. Roman goes down before he even knows what hits him. His chest plumes with blood after he slides down the crates and flops heavy to the ground. His eyes stare unseeing at the crisp blue sky. The Mustang tears through the narrow opening in the gate, and Dean isn't far behind. The woman is an excellent rider, far better than he expected her to be. She clings to the horse's neck and mane, and she doesn't even use the stirrups. She clings on when the horse leaps over rocks, and when she notices Dean tailing her, she urges the horse at an even faster gallop. Dean's face furrows with determination. Baby is built for speed, too. He gives her a little kick with his heel.
Come on, baby. Go.
He's able to keep up with the Mustang just a few yards behind, even when they reach rougher terrain, going further up and into a canyon. He follows them through every curve and dip, guiding his horse just as much as she's guiding him. Dean takes his rope in hand and turns it above his head, but his attempt to lasso the Mustang's neck fails. The woman saws straight through the rope with her knife.
Damn it,
Dean mutters. He's forced to let go of his frayed rope when he and Baby nearly careen off the edge of a cliff. His heart settles high in his throat as he grits his teeth, but he pulls back on the reins, hard, and leans in the opposite direction. Baby's able to bank left, saving them from a long way down to certain death. They continue up the narrow path the Mustang has trod ahead. It carves around and through the mountain. Dean mentally grasps for a plan, aside from just keeping up. Without even a bit of rope, he doesn't know how he's going to slow the woman down without hurting her or the horse. He doesn't want to have to use his gun. Eventually, the canyon breaks into a patch of desert and then grassy plains and tall forest trees. The Mustang begins to tire and slow to a stop. His rider murmurs soothing things to him, stroking his neck. She turns back to look at Dean over her shoulder in dismay. She knows she's caught.
All right, sweetheart. That's enough,
Dean says. He sidles up next to her and intends to grab the Mustang's reins. That's when her swift kick comes, dead in his forehead.